Tonight, many churches in the United States are observing a pro-life Sunday. This Sunday is chosen once a year because of its proximity to the date of the decision by the Supreme Court. 46 years ago, I think, to allow abortion on demand. But what I'd like to just say a couple of things before I get into the meat of what I'd like to tell you. First of all, I want to dedicate this homily to women who have had abortions. Let me tell you why. I've been a priest 40 years, going on 41 years. And I have counseled with a lot of women who have experienced abortions. And I have seen their pain. I have seen the scars that are left. And almost to the one, they always say, "Father, do not be quiet, because we don't want any other woman to have to go through what I'm going through." And so my homily is really dedicated to those women who have taught me so much, especially in confession. They have taught me so much about God's healing, about God's love and forgiveness, and at the same time have told me not to shut up about it. Not only have women taught me that, but the scriptures tonight were quite intense for me, especially the first reading, the first paragraph of the first reading from Isaiah. "Thus says the Lord, For Zion's sake, I will not be silent. For Jerusalem's sake, I will not be quiet. I will not be quiet until her vindication shines forth like the dawn and her victory like a burning torch." During his own time, Isaiah and all of the other prophets, in some way or another, people tried to stop them because their message was not popular. Many prophets were killed because their message was so unpopular. And that has been going on ever since. If you think about what's happening tomorrow, for example, tomorrow we celebrate Martin Luther King Day. Prophets are not people who foretell the future. They are people who speak the truth, even if it's inconvenient or dangerous. And they speak the truth to whatever needs to be spoken to. And so tonight, at this anniversary, I think, like I said, it's the 46th anniversary, we are observing 46 years of children that have been killed. I have to tell you, when this became very much something for me, personal, it happened several years ago. I was preparing for this Sunday's homily, and I was at Starbucks, where many of my good ideas come. And I was sitting at a table writing, and one of the servers, one of the baristas, happened to go to our church. And so he came over to my table to pick up some cups that already were finished from other people. And he said, "Hey, Father Mario." And I responded, "Hello." And I had several papers in front of me. And he says, "What you working on?" And I said, "Well, This coming Sunday, I have to give a homily affirming pro-life and against abortion and other forms of disrespect for human life. And he was taken aback a little bit, not too much. He picked up the cups, and then he walked away. A few minutes later, he comes back to my table, and he says, "Can I just say something to you?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, I'm really glad you're going to say something. My mom told me a couple of years ago, this kid must have been 20, 21. He said, my mom told me a couple of years ago that she almost aborted me. And she was already at the clinic when she chose to leave. And I'm here because she made that decision. At that moment, seeing a living human being before me that might not have existed was extremely intense. So, given that experience, given the experience of the many women that have told me to speak up, and given the experience of a society that we are living in now that is more and more an enemy towards Christian values that we espouse, I think it is important that we renew every year our commitment to stand for human life. So what I'm going to tell you the next, hopefully, 10 minutes or 15 minutes is some of the things that are floating around, and some of the things that are floating around, criticisms especially, because you and I, you live out in the world, and if you tell people that you are pro-life and you're not afraid to say it, you're going to get a pushback sometimes. I was watching a newsreel in preparing for this homily, and I heard Governor Cuomo from New York a couple years ago. He said, anyone who is pro-life is not accepted here in New York. Found that very interesting, that already a governor was saying that. And what happens is that it's all over our society. You can say, for example, well, I'm against abortion for me. But if anybody else wants to do it, that's their business. That's what's called moral relativism, meaning there's really no right or wrong. Everybody should do what they think they ought to do. And if it's not right for another, then they can do whatever they want to do. Folks, the problem is that opens the door to anything. Because you see, if there is nothing in and of itself that is right or wrong, then it all becomes a matter of individual choice. Either an individual or even a society. I always like to sometimes take an absurd circumstance just as an example. But I want you to imagine something that never occurred. Imagine that Adolf Hitler had sent a letter to Teddy Roosevelt. And in that letter, he would have said, Mr. Roosevelt, we have no desire to have war with you. You have heard that we are trying to eliminate our Jews. But I assure you, you are fine to keep your Jews if you want. We're not going to impose our values on you. If we want to kill our Jews, that's our business. And we're a democratically elected governance. We have a right to decide what it is that is right and wrong for us. You do it for you guys. We're not going to impose our values on you. I wonder how we would have reacted. Would we say, well, it's not right for us, but it may be right for them? It's what's called relativism. And the moment that you go there, what you're saying is, basically, you're saying this. You're saying, look, ultimately, there is no God, because everything is up for a vote. Everything is up for a vote. And so if everything is up for a vote, whatever people decide is what shall be done. Whatever is decision of the people is what is moral or immoral. I always enjoy a little comparison. It's a little silly, but it's a comparison that has made sense to me. Imagine five animals deciding what to have for dinner. And so they say, let's hold a democratic election amongst us so that we can decide what to have for dinner. Majority rules. Sounds good. Except then you find out that the five animals are three wolves and two sheep. It's sort of stacked against the sheep, no matter how democratic you are. You see, the whole issue is that there are some things that are beyond a vote. There are some things that are true because they're true. One of the best ways, and let me back up for a minute. After this mass, I think many of you know, I go to a radio station. And at that radio station, I sit with a Jewish rabbi and a Baptist minister. And the three of us spend 2 hours from 7 to 9 p.m. It's 1070 KNTH, if you're interested. But we spend 2 hours taking calls. And we tell people to call us, to agree, to disagree, but not be disagreeable. But inevitably, whenever I talk about being pro-life, I get phone calls that basically are saying, Father, keep your religion to yourself. Don't impose your religion on us. As if the possibility of the killing of a human being is a religious issue only. It's not. It's an issue of life and death. And besides, this whole notion of keep your religion out of government is true. But it does not mean that religion should have nothing to do with social policy. People, the Catholic Church prohibits me as a priest at Mass to take a political stance and recommend that you vote for Democrat or Republican or Independent. It prohibits me from doing that. But we can talk about the moral issues that are contained in law, because society is based on the morals that are based on, the laws that are based on the morals that are based on your beliefs. For me, it's interesting because when people say, well, keep your religion to yourself. I always think, well, wait a minute. The government, the country that we're in was founded on faith. Now people say, what do you mean? The Declaration of Independence. You remember in the Declaration of Independence where it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Meaning, they're not up for a vote. We didn't vote to see if we would hold that all men were created equal. We didn't vote that we have inalienable rights. We didn't vote on whether we had the right to life and to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. None of that was voted on. Where did it come from? It came from the Jewish tradition and the Christian tradition. In the ancient world, there was no such thing as a right, an inalienable right, meaning you can't get rid of it. In the ancient world, I often smile because I think of somebody taking a time machine and going back into, you know, into the Roman Empire around the time of Jesus. And I imagine this time traveler standing in front of the emperor of Rome and saying, I feel discriminated against. I feel that my rights are being violated. I feel victimized. And you know what the Roman emperor would do to you? The Roman emperor would look and say, victimized? Yes. As a matter of fact, we have an entire arena where we enjoy watching you be victimized. It's called the Colosseum, where people will come and pay money sometimes to watch you die. Rights? What rights? The very fact that you're alive or dead is what I decide. You don't have any rights. In the ancient world, there was no such thing. It was all given by the government. A government gives and the government takes away. It depended on the emperor. It was at the beginning where the Jews began to be contacted with by God that the Jews began to be told that you are created in the image, my image and likeness. And you must respect each other and yourself because you do not belong to yourself. And the Jews began understanding that. And when Jesus came along, he affirmed it and also made it more firm. Same thing. He made it so that he said, whatever you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, you do it to me. I was hungry, you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, I was naked. And people will say, well, when did we see you? Whatever you do to the least of my brothers, you did it to me. And so, from the very beginning, this country, when they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, what they were saying is, they had faith in the truths that were revealed by God to the Jewish people and to Christianity. They began our nation based on that. They didn't take a vote. Where do we get the idea that truth is determined by the vote of the people? Truth isn't, you know, little procedural truths, how we ought to do things. Yeah, that we can do that. But fundamental truths, you can't do it by vote. There's things that are or either are not true. And folks, those are the things that immediately people say, well, that's religion. Oh, that's religion. Take it away. No! Why do I have to take it away? My voice as a Christian matters just as much as yours as an atheist or yours as an agnostic. Nowhere are we supposed to say, well, keep your religious opinions to yourself. Where do we get that? That somehow the public square has to be naked of religion, as if we have no voice whatsoever. That's just bull pucky. We're in church. And we have got to say stuff. You know, tomorrow we celebrate Martin Luther King. When you look back at our country, when you look back at the Civil War, because the Civil War occurred because at the founding of our country, freedom had not been extended to all men and women. Freedom had not. And there was a basic contradiction. And men and women died because the blood that was shed in slavery, Lincoln knew, was being paid now by the blood shed of the two sides of the Civil War. The history of progress, the history of humanity, is constructed of the progress that is slowly made to enlarge the circle of respect, the circle of human rights, true human rights, because people are making all kinds of weird claims about what is a human right. But it's always about valuing people. That's what happened in the Civil War. And tomorrow, we remember Martin Luther King. What influenced Martin Luther King? Wasn't any kind of ideology. Martin Luther King was influenced by the gospel. And he said, for Zion's sake, I will not keep quiet. When a lot of people say, don't, just stop making trouble. No. It reminds me of Jesus, when Jesus said, do you think I have come to bring peace to this world? He says, no. I've come to bring division. I've come to set a father against a son against a father, a mother against a daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and so on. When Jesus says peace, he's not talking about imposition of unjust circumstances to keep everybody shut down. He's talking about peace with justice. And so, we have to continue. We will not be quiet. We will not take our religion and keep it in church. Because actually, that's what they, you know, there's a big difference. There's a big difference between freedom of religion and freedom of worship. Freedom of worship means do whatever the heck you want to do as long as you keep it in church. We don't care what you guys do in your churches. Freedom of worship, freedom of religion, is when you say that you live out what you practice at church. You live it out in your daily life. You stand up for it. And we, as religious men and women, as Christians, have as much right as anyone to contribute our point of view and to contribute what we consider to be true. We have as much right as anybody else to participate in the dialogue. And if it means shouting, if it means protesting, we do it. And so I ask you, you know, to remember that the Catholic Church stands for human life. And by the way, this is not just abortion. This is a Pope Francis, I don't know if you remember, but Pope Francis said that there is no circumstance that he can think of that the death penalty is justified. The Catholic Church has enacted the death penalty many times. Yeah. But we were wrong. The death penalty could have been, was done only when it was considered in the interest of society. And when people, and this is one last point, when people say to me, yeah, but religion has caused so many deaths in history. Religion has been a force for evil in the history of humankind. I have to hold my temper. Because when you look at the 20th century, do you know that 262 million people were killed by ideologies that explicitly rejected any God? Communism, Stalin, millions of people dead. Wasn't religion. Mao Zedong, millions of people dead. Hitler, Pol Pot, millions of people dead. All those dead were killed by not religion, but by ideologies that specifically rejected that there's any God. You know, the great writer Dostoevsky, in his book, The Brothers Karamazov, he's a Russian writer. Dostoevsky said, if there is no God, all things are permissible. If there is no God, all things are permissible, because it's just your opinion. And so we continue, year after year after year, standing for what is right, not for what is popular. That's what we're going to do. And I don't care how many people tell me to keep my mouth shut, here or on the radio. It's not going to happen. Okay, I'll shut up.